We'll just walk out.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Evening, friends. Name's Harry and I'm an alcoholic. I don't know why I'm here. Because I'm not a speaker. But I'm supposed to tell you a little bit what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. It's going to be very short. What it was like, I don't remember. What happened, I'm not sure. And now it's great. That's my message. I still don't know if they found me under a rock or if I was born, but back in 1942 sometime, I came into this world, supposedly. And the young child, I was very frightened. I had a father who was a sergeant major in the army and a non-combat instructor, and he liked to practice. And I had a mother that couldn't wait till he got home to tell him all the things that I'd done, whether I'd done them or not. So I spent a lot of time up in Woodshed. I was sexually abused by my grandfather. I was, can't remember, 4 or 5 years old anyway. And I told my father, and did I ever get a beating for that one? So I learned right then and there that anything bad happens, you don't say nothing, you keep it inside. Not long after that, I had my first drink. I was 5. There was a party at the house, and somebody slipped me a little glass of beer. And I wasn't afraid anymore. I made up my mind that nobody would ever hurt me again. Doesn't work too good at the start. When I was 14, I was out with my friends. We're all in their 20s. There was a party, and somebody bet me I couldn't drink a 40-ounce bottle of rye in 10 minutes. Well, I won $10. I woke up 3 days later in a hospital. Again, I'd been physically abused, sexually abused. And I'll never forget the doctor. The first thing he said when I came out of it was, "You should be dead." And I heard that many, many, many times in the next 40 years. People kept telling me I should be dead, but I'm still here, so I guess I'm not. Maybe I am, I don't know. Anyway, I left the hospital, I went right to the tavern, and I said, "Give me 2 drafts. That was in 1956. I went into a blackout. I came out of it, it was 1996. And things had changed a lot. But I hadn't. And in those 40 years, all I know is what people tell me. Apparently, I wasn't a very nice person. Apparently, I hurt a lot of people. I steamrolled over people. I used to go in bars and look for the biggest guy and deck him before he had a chance to move. Because, you see, I wasn't afraid of anything. It's only now that I realize I was afraid of everything. If I got to you first, you wouldn't get to me. I got married. I don't remember getting married. I was told it was because she wanted to get married. Anyway, I had 3 sons in that marriage. I got a divorce. I don't know why, but I remember the divorce. It wasn't too nice. Then I got married again. My wife was 12 years younger than I, me the second time around. And I got a phone call one night from my first wife. Said, "You're going to have to take your boys. I'm afraid of them." By then they were 16, 15, and 10. So like I'd done with everything else in my life, I fixed it. I said, "No problem." I went down, picked up the boys, brought them home. Said to my wife, who was 10 years older than my oldest boy, and I said, "Here you go. You got a ready-made family. I got to go to work." As you see, I drank 24 hours a day. And I worked 18, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when I wasn't working, I was gambling, so, or tearing bars up. See, you weren't allowed to come within 6 feet of my area. I'd sit on my stool at my poker machine. If I sat there for 16 hours, nobody was allowed in that area for 16 hours. And every once in a while, somebody would try to get in there. But anyway, I left them there and went to work. 5 years later, my youngest son, 4 years, tried to crown me with a baseball bat. I caught the bat and took it away from him and told him what I'd do with it if he ever tried that again. Then, like I always did, I went to work. A couple of days later, I came home from work and the police were there and the ambulance. And my wife was lying on the entrance to the building. When I asked what happened, they said my youngest boy had tried to kill her. I told the police, I said, "Well, I'm going to go to the hospital with her." And the police said, "No, you're not. You're going to the station." Somebody had told the police that they'd better find him before I did because I'd kill him. That's the story of my life. Everybody always overreacted. So they took me to the station. I sat there for about an hour. Nobody paid any attention to me, so I got up and went to the desk and said to the sergeant, "If you're looking for me, I'll be up at the hospital." And I left. I found out later the reason they didn't want me in the hospital was because they found my son and they'd taken him there because he'd cut his hand on the knife he was using on her. Well, that was the end of my relationship with my sons. When he went to court for the third time, he'd gone in under the youth protection and they'd played with the charges and he wound up, he got 2 years in Shawbridge anyway. Bad shot today or whatever it is. The judge was apologizing. Because he'd given him the maximum for what he was charged with. And I told the judge, I said, "You don't have to apologize. You did your job. But my job's not done." It was funny, they let me in that courtroom. They wouldn't let my wife in. She was only the victim. But they sat policemen both sides of me, in front of me and behind me. I have no idea why. You're overreacting again. So I looked up and the boy was there grinning at me and I told him, I said, "Next time I see you, you're going to die." So once again they overreacted and they made me go see a psychiatrist. I had one visit with the psychiatrist and he went to see a psychiatrist. So, The next 10 years, my wife and I lived in the same house. Like I said, I worked a lot. I went to bars a lot. I didn't go home much. But when I did go home, she'd go in her room and lock the door. And she wouldn't come out until I left. We spent 10 years like that. And it didn't really bother me at the time because I had my poker machine and my stool was there and I could always sit at the bar. And if that got boring, I could always go to work. Now, I know a lot of people don't know what a blackout is. I remember one time deciding that I was starting to come around a little bit. I didn't much like that because I didn't want to be in this world. So I said, I'll show them, and I called work. And I said, don't call me, I'll call you. I worked on the railroad. I worked on call for 35 years. So I did what I wanted to do. I got drunk. And I woke up like I always did with my head on the kitchen table. I said, oh, geez, I got to go back to work. I picked up the phone, called the boss, and I said, it's me. He said, I know who it is. What do you want? Oh, I said, I'm ready to come back to work. He said, what are you talking about? You worked the last 4 days. Any of you people that take trains, I was an engineer. And at the time, I was working their top trains, Montreal-Toronto. But you see, I worked 35 years on the railroad, and I don't remember being there. Yeah, I do, last year. Because I decided to quit drinking for 1 year. There was somebody I'd met, and they were having a hard time, and I said, well, geez, I'll quit. Quit for a year. Because everybody knows I drink my 18, 20 quarts of beer a day, and I drink my half gallon, sometimes two every day. In the case of 2-4, might pass a football game or a hockey game into no overtime. So, if I quit, I don't know anybody can quit. And believe me, quitting is the easiest thing in the world. Take the bottle and put it down and say, that's it. I know because in 2 weeks I must have quit a couple of thousand times. I even lasted 10 minutes one time. But in the meantime, my partner, who I was trying to help, had decided I was a drunk. There's that overreaction again. So she decides to go to Al-Anon. And after watching me try to quit for 2 weeks, she says, there's a place that can help people like you. And I said, oh, they can help me quit for a year? And she said, yep. And said, where's that? She said, it's AA. And there's a meeting in Brownsburg on a Sunday morning. I said, oh, nice. The company I worked for had had an employee assistance program for years. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what AA was. Found out soon enough. So anyway, Sunday morning, I pop my 2-4 into the car and away I go to this meeting. And I said, Legion, beautiful. So I sit there and I see all these people going in. And then they close the door. And I said, oh, geez, they locked the door. I sat and drank my beer and waited till I saw the people coming out. And I said, if this is what going to a meeting is, it's not that bad. For some reason, I went back the next week. And I did the same thing. By the third week, because you see, I'm very intelligent. By the third week, I had it all figured out. They closed that door, they locked it, and you weren't allowed in after 10 in the morning. So I waited till the door closed. I went up and I put my hand on the handle and the door swung open And there was the goofiest looking guy you ever saw in your life. Big grin on his face. Come in, you're in the right place. Well, I never saw anything like that in all my life. There's all these people in there, they're laughing, they're smiling, the men are hugging each other, and I thought, I don't know how to play here. Anyway, I sat right in the back, and everybody went as far forward as they could. They started talking about this God thing. And I was sitting there, and believe it or not, we were talking about God. The only thing that was going in my head was, can't you see I'm here? And I'm not an alcoholic. Bunch of wusses. I can drink any of you. I drink all of you under the table. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just a good drinker. Anyway, as soon as the meeting was over, I headed for that door, and there he was again. You keep coming back. You're in the right place. Well, for some reason I did, and I think it was just to show him. One morning he stood there and said, you keep coming back, and I turned around and I looked at him and I said, if you say that to me one more time, I'm going to knock you on your ass. And he stood there with this stupid grin on his face and said, that's all right, you keep coming back. For the first time in my life, someone had called my bluff. I turned around and ran. But believe it or not, the next thing I knew, I had a whole year that I hadn't had a drink. That's a good reason to celebrate. They kept saying that the first one would get me. So the first thing I did was buy a quart of beer, sit down at home, and down it. And you know something? It didn't get me. The next day, they had a retirement party for me at work. I don't know why. The last year I worked, I couldn't do my job. I couldn't do my job unless I was drunk. And I found out that when I was working, even the fellows that didn't work, that didn't drink, carried bottles in their work bags in case I ran a little short. Because apparently, when I didn't know what I was doing, I did a very good job. But as soon as I started to come around, they said I got a little dangerous. So I started to think or something. So anyway, I went to my party. And I had a couple of drinks, and we had supper, and I had some wine. And after supper, I had a couple of drinks. And I drove back up into the hills. It didn't get me. So now I knew that everything I'd heard in these rooms was wrong. But the third day, a friend of mine called and said, I got a 2-4, you want to come over? And I said, I'm on my way. So I packed up the lady, over we went. We finished that one, got another one, finished that one, got another one. It must have been 10 o'clock at night. I said to her, I said, you ready to go home? She said, yeah. And I said, good, because he's got no more beer. So I drove her home. Now, I live in the hills. I live in the bush, 7 miles from the closest village. My neighbors are bears and moose and deer. Raccoons. Beaver. I got home, I said to her, you got your key? She said, yeah. There's my house locked up, which has never been in my lifetime. But when a woman comes around, you got to lock the door, you know? So I said, good, I'll see you later, and I peeled off to my bar. I walked in, said, give me a drink. The owner was behind the bar, and he looked at me, and he said, no. I said, hey, buddy, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you, give me a drink. He said, no, I'll give you a coffee. He said, don't you remember about a year ago you came here and asked me if you'd come in for a drink, not to serve you? Well, the last thing I remember is trying to figure which end of the borough is going to start on to demolish it. Because you see, to go into a blackout, I don't have to drink. The only feelings I had all my life were anger and more anger, which became rage. I come out of it about 3 hours later. I was sitting on my stool at my poker machine with a cup of coffee. And I didn't want to be there. So I went home. And the first meeting I walked into was December 17th, 1996. December the 20th, 1997, I walked into the meeting again. And I've been there ever since. Now, what I get from AA meetings is stupid little sayings, because it, honestly, my head cannot take a whole lot in at the same time. I've got the committee going and the hamster running around, and it's pretty hard. But I hear things. In fact, just recently I was at a meeting and somebody said something made a lot of sense to me. I found out since then it doesn't make sense to anybody else. What he said was, when I was drinking, I used to sit on my couch in my underwear with my bottle and give shit to anybody come near me. Then I quit drinking. I'd sit on my couch in my underwear with my cup of coffee and give shit to anybody that come near me. In fact, I had a young fellow this morning ask me what that meant. And I said to him, I said, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has very little to do with alcohol. It's the university of life. I stopped growing emotionally at about the age of 5. I've been around the rooms now for, well, I'll have 7 years in December. And that'll make me almost a teenager. Too bad I'm stuck with this old carrying case, but... It's only a couple of weeks ago that I noticed that women look different than men. Women were always something you stayed away from, and if they looked at you, you run like hell. But part of that's still true. But here I am, just a young fella today. And right now what I'm doing is trying to learn how to live. Oh yeah, they said that you had to get a sponsor. So I got me a sponsor. But not until I heard at another meeting that you could fire a sponsor anytime you wanted. Guess who my sponsor was? Know that goofy little guy at the door? I'll get a sponsor, and as soon as he thinks he's getting somewhere with me, I'll just cut his legs out from under him. I'll fire him. Well, I'm happy today. I still have the same sponsor today. He's a wonderful person. He's never answered a question since I've known him. Anytime I ask him a question, he tells me the answer's in the book. And he won't even tell me what chapter. Believe it or not, today I can find a lot of the answers. You know, I got a book when I first come in. It took me a couple of days. I read it. I knew it. I had the program. Everything was great. I put it away. About a year and a half later, just after I'd asked this fellow to be my sponsor, I read it again. It wasn't the same. So I told him, I said, do you know that book? It changes. not good. And of course, he does what he always does. He laughs at me. He says, you know, Harry, the words haven't changed. I'm pretty sure they have. This is not what I read the first time. And the more I read, believe me, I don't read that much. I notice that I have a habit of skipping over words. Like in this step, the seventh step, humbly ask them. I didn't know what that word humbly meant, so we just pushed that aside, and it says ask them to remove our shortcomings. So it's pretty hard to be humble when you've known everything all your life. I've fixed everything all my life. Small problem, and nothing I ever fixed worked again, but I used to take clocks, radios apart, put them back together, a big pile of spare parts that were left over, I put them in a box somewhere. They wouldn't work. I did the same with people. So, I don't know. Here I was, this very, very intelligent person, smarter than all the rest of you. I went to bed one night, and I woke up the next morning, and for some reason, I don't know why, I didn't know anything. Every time somebody asked me a question, I'd say, I don't know. And my life has been real good since that morning. And I used to sit at meetings. I got a friend who introduced himself as a real alcoholic. Whoa! I used to sit there. What makes him more real than me? The sponsor said it's in the book, so I looked through the book and I found it. I don't know. Until I started working the steps, got into the steps, and read every word. In chapter 5 it says, completely to this program. It says, half measures. Well, I'm a great one for half measures. I never did anything completely in my life, except for drinking and gambling. I did that pretty good. So now when I read, I try to see these words that I skipped over so often that I didn't even believe they were in the book. I have a great life. So now I got a sponsor. Wow. Now I'm looking at the steps. I'm not too sure about them things yet, but I'm looking at them. My sponsor says, oh no, before that, the first year I was in, he took me to what they call an intensive weekend. And if I thought the guys hugging each other at those meetings was bad, you should have seen this weekend. My, my, and there's people from all over the place. I've been to 15 intensive weekends with my sponsor. The only time he ever picked me up and brought me to the weekend was the first one. And today I know why. Because when we got there, he took the keys, put them in his pocket, and said, let's have a good time. He knew if I didn't have the keys to the car, I couldn't very well travel the 60 or some odd miles to get back, because with my looks, nobody's going to pick me up if I'm hitchhiking. Well, I look good today. In those days, it was a little different. I had a beard down to here, and my hair was down to here. What was it they told me when I first came in and everybody started going to the front of the rooms? It was something about my eyes that scared people. I don't know why. I just hated everybody. I guess it showed. Anyway, we go to this intensive weekend, and then he said, there's a couple of fellas coming up from the States. They're going to do 12 steps in a day. Oh, that's good. I said, where? He said, Camp Chapel. Well, that's only 20 minutes from my place. I said, okay, I'll go up and see what it's all about. I get there and I meet these guys from the States. The first one I meet is 6'8". He's about 350 pounds. And he acts like a two-year-old that didn't get his Ritalin today. Whoa, mama. And he says, I want you to meet my friend. My friend from Harlem. Oh. I meet this guy. He's about this wide. He's as tall as I am. Puts his hand out. I check to see if all my fingers were still there. My sponsor says, just tap him on the shoulder for the fun of it. It's like hitting a steel girder. My sponsor said, you going to stay? I said, have I got a choice? He said, no. I said, I guess I'm staying. So anyway, they went through the steps. For the first time since I've been in the program, I actually understood a little bit about the steps. He made it very simple. And here I'm going to meetings, and this program is a simple program for complicated people. Can't they make a simple program for simple people? No. So anyway, here I got a sponsor. I've been through the steps. Everything's going great. When I was drinking, I'd get married. When I got fed up, I'd just leave. I get sober, she leaves. I mean, the dishwasher quit when the cook walked out, you know. So, here I am. I've been a year and a half living by myself. I'm still alive. A couple of times I nearly didn't make it. I found out you don't eat chicken on the counter for 2 days before you eat it. It sort of does things to you. But I'm learning. I'm learning all the time. And they said, you got to do service. Well, honestly, this is the most uncomfortable place in the world for me. I like to sit way in the back, take everybody's inventory. And I enjoy the meeting. When I have to sit up here, like I said, I'm not a speaker. So, got to do service. Well, I made coffee till I got fed up to make coffee. Well, I got a friend. I think he's making coffee at about 15 meetings, and he's been doing it for Jordy. Great man. So I said, well, that's not for me. Chairing meetings, secretary, not for me. Make coffee, and then finally they told me, well, you better let somebody, give somebody else a chance. Make coffee and set up. So a young fella come in to make the coffee, and I went in to help him set up, and that lasted for about 6 months. And a fella said to me, what do you do on Thursday nights? I said, oh, I go bowling. Ah, that's beautiful. Why don't you come to a meeting? Crazy, already go Sunday and Monday. So I got talked into going to a meeting in a penitentiary. And here all this time I'd been going to meetings trying to find somebody that was as crazy as I was. I said, why not? There, maybe. So I went to the penitentiary. I've been going there for the last couple of years. It's pretty neat. I still haven't found anybody as crazy as me. And the fellows that I go to see are all lifers, so. And then I heard a couple of the fellows talk and said, well, Bob won't be able to take us out anymore. And I said, what's this take you out? You're in jail. You're in the van. No, we're allowed to go out to AAB. But we need an escort, and our escort's sick. So I said, well, what do you got to do for that? And they said, well, you have to get cleared by the RCMP. Man, I don't know if the RCMP is looking for me or not. All those years, I don't remember. But what better way to find out? I went and got cleared by the RCMP. And today is my life. I take my constant meetings on Monday night, Tuesday night. I go and have a meeting with them on Thursday night. Some of you might have seen me around at Roundups because Saturday or Sunday, why not spend the day, you know? So I spend more time in the pen than I do at home. In fact, I've been offered a room there a couple of times. And today, and these guys make me laugh. Every time we get back, oh, thank you, Harry, thank you. What the hell are you thanking me for? Don't you guys know, realize that if it hadn't have been for you, I wouldn't have gone to that meeting tonight? Because for me to get dressed and drive an hour and a half to go to a meeting, for myself, no way. I'm a lot better sitting on my couch in my underwear hoping somebody will come around so I can get the shit. But so where I was here about 5 years doing one meeting, two meetings a week, I almost laughed out loud tonight when you said home group. I got Brownsburg Sunday morning, Star in St. Jerome Sunday night. I got Abel on Monday. What do I do on Tuesday? Oh, Two Mountains on Tuesday. I go to St. Sever on Wednesday sometimes if I don't go to St. Laurent. I go to St. Anne de Plan on Thursday. I got to see the boys. Friday, if I don't go to the shoot, well, I might go to St. Agast or maybe I'll stay home. Saturday, as a rule, I don't want to know nothing about nothing. So anyway, that's my life today. If it wasn't for these fellows that are locked up, I'd be doing one meeting, two meetings a week. Because it's too much trouble. I mean, the closest meeting I've got is a 20-minute drive from my house. That's only once a week. When you stop and think about it, I'm only a little over an hour from here. That's a lot of putting yourself out just for yourself, you know that. And I wouldn't be here tonight if Dave hadn't have asked, so. You know. Anyway, I'm glad to be here. And by the way, I am an alcoholic, and my problem is Harry. Thank you.
One minute.